Good morning. This is Ideas and Issues. I'm your host, Hugh LaFollette. On the show this week, we'll be talking with Rod Martin, chairman of the Vanguard, and our topic will be flat taxation. Rod, glad to have you on the show.
Good to be here.
I know one of the concerns which you've had in your various positions, you were formerly policy director for Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee. You've also run for Congress, that you're very concerned about the current taxation system, and you have a proposal about a way of changing that system. I wonder if you could begin by giving the listener a brief sense of what you see as being the primary flaws of the current taxation system, and then we'll turn to look at your positive proposal.
Most obvious problem with the current tax system is that it is corruptingly complex. Not only cannot the average citizen understand the tax code as it stands, but no accountant can understand the tax code as it stands. And in fact, when I was in law school, one of the exercises that our federal taxation professor had us engage in was completing a very simple problem concerning an individual's 1040. And we discovered that with 64 people in the room, we came up with about 62 different answers on that particular problem, and the professor had a different answer still. And her point was just very simple, that everything is debatable, that the Internal Revenue Service is almost always wrong, and that no one is ever really right. And that's just wrong, and it's unfair, and it means that there's never a sense of security, and no one really knows what they're paying. And what we want to do is change that so that everyone understands exactly what they're paying, has some basic fairness and common sense, and above all, really has an intellectual connection between what money is going out of their pockets and what government is actually spending on specific programs. And of course, what that means is that people will, again, for the first time in almost a century, have a real understanding of what their tax level means in terms of specific results and whether those results are what they want.
Okay, so primarily two issues, that it's complex and that it's not fair. I mean, at least those are the two primary things I heard. Is that correct?
That would be fair.
Okay. Now let's turn and look at what your proposal is. I mean, what are you going to put in its place?
What we would do is we would replace the current system with a 17% flat tax. And what that means is that all income above a certain level would be taxed at exactly the same rate. In this case, 17%. That's not an ideal rate. It's just a number that has been picked because it would give government the ability to continue the exact current level of services. We don't want to get into a debate about the size and scope of government at the same time as we're fixing the tax system, because it would just torpedo the proposal. But a 17% flat tax means that all of your income is taxed, 17% is taken out of it in such a fashion that you can plan for it, that you can know what's coming out, that you can always know exactly what government's take is. And what we would do to make sure that this was fair to all Americans is we would have very generous personal exemptions, so that an adult gets a personal deduction of $13,000, and every child gets a personal deduction of $5,000. So a family of four making $36,000 a year or less pays absolutely no income tax under our flat tax proposal. And then, because the tax rate is the same for everybody, that 17% comes out of the dollars above $36,000. So someone making $37,000 pays 17% of $1,000, whereas somebody making $1 million pays 17% of $1 million minus $36,000. So the tax system is proportioned very fairly between all the people. The richest Americans will pay radically more taxes in some cases than they are right now, because there will be no deductions at all except those personal deductions. And yet, it'll be a low, flat, fair rate that everybody can plan for and everybody can accept.
All right, let's look at each of the elements of your plan and try to get a little bit better sense of exactly what is involved. For example, one of the things that you emphasize is there are no deductions.
Correct.
And when you mean no deductions, you mean no deductions, correct?
I mean no deductions.
So some of the things that we would now consider very normal part of our deductions, charitable deductions, a house mortgage, medical expenses and so on would not be, there would be no deductions for those.
Well, that's correct, and yet the approach that we've taken is not quite as straightforward as that would seem, and it has a really tremendous result for the individual citizen. Because take health care, for instance. What we would do, and this is somewhat separate from the flat tax proposal itself, but what we simultaneously advocate is this concept of medical savings accounts you've heard something about, or eliminating the death tax, or creating a system of personal retirement accounts over on the Social Security side. And those are all big fancy terms and would take three or four interviews to get all into by themselves. But the gist of it is this. We would remove your pension, your health care costs, and a host of other things like education expenses completely from the definition of gross income. So money that you spend on that wouldn't be deducted. It just wouldn't be taxed at all. And what this means is the average working American is going to get an amazing tax cut in those key areas, and the rest of their income gets defined as gross income once again, and it gets taxed at the 17% rate above $36,000.
Okay, so when you say health care costs are not going to be taxed at all, does that include actual out-of-pocket expenses, or would it simply include the amount of money that goes toward insurance, for example, out of your paycheck?
Well, if you spend it on health care, you don't get taxed on it. So say you had an authorized medical savings account, kind of like what the Republican Congress passed a few years ago. On a trial basis, there were 720,000 medical savings accounts permitted and 360,000 Medicare medical savings accounts permitted. If you put it in that account, until you spend it, it isn't taxed, or at least it wouldn't be under our system. And when you do spend it, as long as it is spent on health care, it's not taxed. And whether that's health insurance, like you said, or it's your stub toe and you run down to the doctor, either way, that is removed from your total gross income. But much like an IRA, under current circumstances, if it's stuck in that account, it's okay in the short term. And there's only taxation if later on you spend it on something else. But this, of course, doesn't directly pertain to the flat tax. Those are separate proposals. On its own, without those separate proposals, the flat tax would just tax all income above a certain amount. There's no provision for deductions, and it's very, very important that it be that way, because we have a system right now that rewards 1,001 special interests, 1,000,001 special interests, all in maddeningly complex ways. You don't really know who's getting what or why, but somebody in a smoke-filled room in Washington sure knows. And what we want to do is we want to get all of that out of politics. We want to get all of that out of the system of corruption that has grown up around the Beltway, and we want to make it flat and simple and fair so everyone understands exactly who's getting what. And then by bringing it down to 17% and taking the lowest earners completely off the tax rolls, everybody will have so much additional ability to plan, and most people will have so much more money in their pocket that they're more than able to take care of charitable giving or whatever it is they want to do.
Okay. I realize that it's a separate proposal, and I'm kind of curious about it because I wasn't aware of this element of your proposal. So let me just ask one more question, then we can move on. Concerning these other accounts, the health care account, pension account, education account, I mean, it strikes me that one of the attractions of your initial proposal is that they're no debatable cases.
Correct.
You're either single or you're not, you're married or you're not, you have kids or you're not. Though, I suppose even there, you might end up with some problems with separated parents or separated. But generally, there are no confusions. On the other hand, once you have something like, though they're not called deductions, they seem to function in similar ways, these health care accounts.
Well, tax credits. Because a deduction, you know, say you're taxed at the 33% rate, you get a third of your money back as a deduction. This is above the line. This is removing those things from the concept of gross income. So it's just never taxed at all. It's exactly like money you spent on, say, your accountant down at your business. That is a business expense, so we just never tax it.
Okay.
That's how this would work. We would treat every American's health care costs or their education costs as being effectively a business expense, and they just wouldn't pay any taxes on it at all.
It does seem like, though, you got one of the problems you were trying to avoid. And maybe, again, I'm just not sure, which is borderline cases. I mean, if you count health care costs, I mean, we can all agree that if you, if you go get a vaccination, that's going to count. But, you know, what about a facelift? What about braces? What about liposuction? When you talk about educational expenses, I can imagine genuine debates over whether something was or wasn't a genuine educational expense. And so there's still going to have to be some kind of system of rules, some kind of borderline calls were you to go this route.
Oh, yes, absolutely. This is a proposal that is far from completely fleshed
okay.
out.
Okay, all right.
It's going to take several years for, I think, even all of the conservatives to completely agree on exactly the parameters of, say, what a medical savings account should be. And I'm one of the people who thinks that we ought to define it very broadly because more freedom is better. But, you know, that's not necessarily where we're going to end up. And it really does kind of muddy the waters a little bit for our purposes today because it
okay.
doesn't directly have to do with the flat tax. And yet, I really wanted to bring it out because there is a need in this country to redefine gross income as well. That is the term by which the IRS decides what you are taxed on and what you are not. You know, for instance, we don't go out there and tax you on your business expenses. There are a lot of things that we just say aren't taxable. And those of us who favor the flat tax, as a rule, also favor narrowing the definition of gross income so that working families have a lot more money in their pocket to do the basic necessities of life. So I just wanted to throw that in there while we were talking about deductions because
okay.
there won't be any deductions in the flat tax system.
Well, now, what are some of the ways that you would define gross income? Because, I mean, that is directly applicable to your plan.
Absolutely. And what we would do is we would say that anything that doesn't constitute a business expense or whatever would be taxable over the amount of these personal exemptions. So, you know, income from whatever source derived is the term the IRS uses today. And that's pretty much how it would work here, unless we modified the system separately. The current system of gross income is what we would go with. We don't want to muck around with that a whole lot. It's kind of like mucking around with the size and scope of government at the same time you change the system. And so if you would pay taxes on it right now, you would pretty much pay taxes on it under our system, except that we would remove a few things. There would be no death tax under our system. We think that it's hideously unfair to tax you when you die. And this is really counterproductive for the economy. It's a socialist idea from the early 20th century that we should not allow people to accumulate multi-generational wealth. Well, that's just silly. That doesn't help the economy, and Washington doesn't spend that money well. Let income amass over time. Let people pass something on to their kids. They've worked their whole life. It's their money. Steve Forbes put it this way. He said, no taxation without respiration, and I stand by that. We want to eliminate the capital gains tax because what that effectively does is it means you are double or triple taxed on income. This is a different concept, say, from eliminating the corporate income tax, which we aren't proposing. What we are saying, though, is you should be taxed one time on all income at the source and leave it at that. We would eliminate a number of the things that you're hearing about in the news today, like the marriage penalty and so forth, because the flat tax is so simple that there's no way for it to get a complexity in it, like the marriage penalty, which is just kind of a quirk of the current system. So in this way, we would actually change it a little bit, but basically the system of gross income we have today would stay intact.
Okay, let me pause just for a second for the benefit of anyone who's tuned in late. This is Ideas and Issues. My guest today is Rod Martin, chairman of the Vanguard PAC, and we're discussing flat taxation. What did want to ask you one question. I mean, there are a number of things that you mentioned that get excluded from the notion of gross income, and I think it's probably helpful to spend at least a moment talking about each of those. I mean, you mentioned the death tax, and you talked about being able to leave money to your children. What is the current tax on money that you would want to leave your children? I mean, if I manage to have a couple hundred grand, can I leave that to my children, or what portion of that will be taxed?
For the most part, you can, and there's a pretty generous exemption which just went up, as I recall, to a little over $1 million. So, you know, for many, many Americans, the death tax really doesn't affect them at all. And the Democrats have bandied about this number of something like 2% of all Americans that are actually affected by it. And that's fair, no question about that. But the problem is who that 2% is. The 2% isn't Bill Gates, because Bill Gates has an army of accountants in half the nations of the world sheltering his money. The 2% is almost entirely guys like, say, me, with a small business, something to pass on that is probably unincorporated. And then I turn 70 and I've amassed $2-4 million in assets, and it's in an ongoing business concern, and now I want to leave it to my kids or my grandkids, and they have to liquidate it to pay the tax bill, because there's no real good way to shelter it. That's who your 2% is, and that's who the death tax hurts. So we want to get rid of that, and we want to get rid of any other foolish boondoggle kind of tax that's been attached to the system, primarily for the purpose of wealth redistribution or some socialist utopian dream. We want to be fair to Americans. We want to encourage growth. We want to help mom and pop make that business grow and thrive and pass it on.
Okay. What about the second element, the exclusion of the capital gains tax? In fact, maybe you ought to explain. I mean, most people probably know, but briefly explain what the capital gains tax is and then explain your objection to it.
Capital gains tax is a tax that says if some asset you own grows in value over time, the government ought to get a share of the growth in value, which is kind of offensive on its face if you think about it in a lot of cases. But, you know, the idea is if you go out here and you make a bundle in the stock market because stock prices went up, you know, that's income too, and there ought to be tax on it. Well, I'm not sure that there really ought to be, because the truth is, a lot of times, that is impossible to apply in a way that doesn't really, really harm our economy. For instance, if your home appreciates in value over time, and then you want to sell it and move, do you get hit by capital gains tax? Well, it depends, but a lot of people do. There has been a housing boom out in the San Francisco Bay Area, for instance, and a lot of places that you wouldn't want to live in are now worth high six figures or over $1 million, and they're really trashy houses, but they're worth all this money, and it's basically because of the internet bubble. Well, the internet bubble just burst, and so these people have these houses that they need to sell because they've lost their job, and their .com isn't there anymore, and they need to get out. But the housing market hasn't caught up. So they can't really sell their house. They're going to take a loss compared to what they would expect to get on that house if they can sell it at all. And then they're going to have to pay capital gains on it to boot. So at the worst economic time in their life, they get hit. We just think that's wrong. We think that people ought to be able to have their assets grow. We think that their small business ought to be able to grow, and we shouldn't punish that growth, because the American economy's growth is what makes us all less poor. And if our goal is to see poverty reduced in this country, we want to do those things that will help everybody actually eliminate poverty. This stuff doesn't hurt the big guy. This stuff hurts the rising middle class and the poor.
Well, what, I mean, I'm wondering about that, though. I mean, when you say it doesn't hurt the big guy, I mean, to use the example you used a moment ago, Bill Gates, I mean, I guess I would have thought most of his wealth was from capital gains and not from income.
Well, a lot of it is, but he has an army of accountants that can figure out cool and new ways to get around the IRS. I mean, it's just real simple. When you're a multi-billionaire, there are a billion tax shelters that give you a way to avoid doing what you and I would have to do. And that's why the flat tax is so very attractive, because the flat tax means there aren't any of these loopholes. There aren't any unfair provisions that some rich guy gets that you and I don't. You know, the flat tax is the great equalizer. And a lot of these rich guys who aren't paying much of anything, all of a sudden will have to pay 17%. And they weren't before. And that's a chunk of money. And meanwhile, mom and pop out here who are struggling may not have to pay anything at all. Because if their business has a bad year, all of a sudden a whole lot of things are expensed. And that's one thing we do. We have immediate expensing, and you can carry over unused expensing to the next year. All of a sudden, these folks have a tax break like they've never had before, and millions of Americans are taken off the rolls entirely. It just helps everybody get ahead, and it puts fairness in the system that hadn't been there in years.
Who's going to pay more on this system? I mean, you at least at the beginning you said that you chose a 17% figure because that allowed the government to generate as much money as it had before.
This is revenue neutral from a governmental perspective.
Right. And if a lot of people are going to be getting breaks, then presumably someone's going to be paying more. Have you done some kind of study which can really show, I mean, looking at the kinds of deductions that people have taken, the kinds of incomes they have, to identify where that would be?
I personally have not, but studies done by, like, Americans for Tax Reform, Heritage Foundation, Cato Institute, all these different outfits that have been analyzing this for 10 or 20 years now, show that as income rises, actual tax revenues from people in certain income brackets go up, and that's especially true in the over 100,000 bracket. Now, the offsetting factor for them, because they don't have any of their loopholes anymore, they don't have any of their charitable deductions, they don't have any of their mortgage interest deductions, they don't have any of those things that they currently use. All of that is gone. But what they do get, and this is the miracle of the Reagan tax cut, by the way, from 20 years ago that nobody remembers. They don't remember why that really spurred so much economic growth. The economic growth didn't come anywhere near as much from the tax cut itself as from the marginal rate reduction. Because the top bracket in 1981 was 70%. So if you were in that top bracket, you needed to do everything in your power and spend amazing amounts of money, time, and effort to hide your income and do all kinds of unproductive things to make sure that government couldn't take your money. I mean, 70% is just incredible. Reagan brought that down into the 30s in a couple steps. And so all of a sudden, people could just go out, invest their money straightforwardly, put it into businesses straightforwardly, pay the tax, and it wasn't any big deal. They could get rid of this entire shelter industry that had grown up in the 70s, and I'm sure you recall how ridiculous it had gotten. Our flat tax brings that top rate down to 17%. And 17% is fair, and nobody can argue with the fairness of 17%. And so it creates a powerful incentive for these people to go out and engage in really productive activity, which means there's more money in the economy, more tax money flowing into the Treasury, and more people working. And that's really the bottom line.
All right. Let me ask you about an issue connected with the rate. We've got a little over 4 minutes here, and maybe we can get in a couple more questions. The idea of a flat tax is that it's not a progressive tax.
Correct.
On the current system, there are three or four steps, I believe, in the tax code, ranging from 15% to 39%.
39.6%.
Okay. One of the things that's pretty clear that your system does is it's not just that it removes deductions and so on, but it also says, no, everyone pays the same rate. What's wrong with the progressive? I mean, historically, we've had a progressive taxation system for a number of years. What's wrong with it? Why do we want a flat one instead?
Historically, of course, we've had it since the early 20th century, and we didn't have it prior to that, and I think we were right before. It's just wrong on its face. The fact that you make a little bit more money than your neighbor does not mean that you should have to shoulder a greater percentage burden, because under a flat rate, you're going to shoulder a greater burden anyway. You know, it's one thing to say that you should pay more, and you should. I mean, that's fair. I mean, even in the Bible, the tithe is 10%, and so the rich guy pays way more money than the poor guy. But why should the rich guy have to pay, you know, 20% instead of 10 or 30% instead of 10? We want to get away from that. We want things to be fair. We want to eliminate the problem of bracket creep, because the biggest thing here is having more brackets creates a huge disincentive for some people to move up the ladder, because they lose more money when they move into the next bracket than they gain from the pay raise, for instance. We want to eliminate that. We want to make it very simple and fair for everybody.
All right, the last couple of minutes, would you like to sort of summarize what you see as the drawbacks of the current system and the advantages of your proposal?
The drawbacks of the current system are very simple. It's so complex, no one knows what it is. It isn't possible to have fairness when nobody understands what they are supposed to do. You have all kinds of problems with enforcement. You have all kinds of problems with even understanding the connection between what you're paying and what government's doing for you. We want to restore that fairness, and we also want to restore the simplicity and the benefit that comes from that, which is a connection between people's understanding the check they wrote and the benefit they get back. And ultimately, what I'd like to see from the flat tax is the rekindling of a public policy debate in America, broadly based, all people involved, where they look at their taxes and they say, okay, am I getting my money's worth? Now that I know what it's going to, are these the benefits government ought to be giving? Are these the things government ought to be doing? And as long as people don't understand the connection between their money and what's being spent on their behalf, that's going to be impossible. And we think that this will be the greatest civics lesson in the history of America.
Okay. Any last point you'd like to make before we sign off?
Just that I think this is very doable. Some people wondered when I was campaigning on this whether this was something that we could really pass. I think we really could. I wouldn't want to try to do it this year. But if we had 20 or so more Republicans in the U.S. House of Representatives, I think it would be passable there. I think the Senate would have some problems with it, but with a 50-50 Senate, that's inevitable. And a couple of election cycles, and that'll be different anyway. This is something that can be done if there is a groundswell of support behind it. Most of the groundswell is already there, and I think we could see this in the next 5 to 10 years.
Okay, well, thank you very much for appearing on the show today.
Thank you.
I've been speaking today with Rod Martin, chairman of the Vanguard PAC. Our topic has been flat taxation. This is Hugh LaFollette for Ideas and Issues. Good day.